He's played 161 times for South Africa, but at 37, he's by far the oldest member of the national men's hockey squad. And it's been quite a journey for goalkeeper Rassie Pieterse, a man who only got into hockey to meet girls and because of a bunch of rugby injuries. Fast forward nearly 20 years, and he's part of a South African squad that has had to fund its own way to the Tokyo Olympics. Something Pieterse says he's got quite used to.
Yeah, Dylan, you know, it's not just now. You know, it's been like a long time. It's almost like we've got, can stay in a way, not like, but almost like, almost got used to it, which is not quite right. I mean, if we know only 12 countries can qualify for the Olympic Games, and if we're one of them, we're the only country that's not professional, you know, we're always going to have our back against the ropes. And, you know, it started World Cup or Olympic qualifiers. You know, when we went to India, when Sasnok told us, you know, we have to make the final World Series. You know, when you go there, you make the final World Cup Series, you meet the criteria, you come back and you see, you know, a ball has been sent to your house that you have to sort out. That becomes quite tough. And then you start thinking about, you know, how long can you carry on? Especially, I mean, a lot of our players are based in Europe. To improve their hockey, because there's no professional setup in South Africa for these players. You know, and then when they have to fly back for local tournaments or fly back for training camps, you know, they've got to fork it out their own pockets. So after a while, you know, it becomes quite expensive. And I think that's probably the biggest problem in SA hockey, is like players are retiring too early, and I think it's more financial thing than anything else. The boys that's here, I mean, it's absolute. I mean, I said the other day, hockey is not a career, it's a lifestyle. You know, the boys are passionate of what we're doing. So, yeah, I mean, we can only do as much as we can, but we know to perform at the top, we need kind of support. Unfortunately, sport has gone professional. We need financial assistance. We've had some great support from guys like Mark Sharman and them with Match Kit, you know, starting their crowdfunding for us. I think, you know, you can only get so much money in a crowdfunding. They've done a great job with that. But at least they started the conversation. And I think corporates are actually realizing now, and a lot of even my personal mates, never knew. They thought we were getting paid to play hockey. They never knew we were forking out to play hockey. So it just gets that conversation going. And I think there's so many good people in the hockey community. And I always said, you know, SA Hockey is a sleeping giant. If you see how many hockey players there are in South Africa and at school level, how serious school hockey is starting to become, is we're definitely ahead of the game with other countries. It's just to get that top level right. So fortunately, it seems like we've raised funds to go to the Olympics. So nobody's going to pay to go to the Olympics. But it's things like this, so we were sitting in posh today. It takes money to prepare. And I think a lot of athletes, you know, you can't just rock up at the games, you're underprepared, and that costs money. So it's an ongoing thing. You know, Olympics is now one thing. You know, the next thing is World Cup, and it's World Cup qualifiers, and there's Commonwealth Games. You know, the boys want to go win a medal next year at Commonwealth Games, go do well at the World Cup. So there's a lot of money that's needed to keep this program properly going.
So what needs to get right, Rassie, then, in terms of SA Hockey positioning itself as a sport and as a brand that corporates want to put money into? Because there's no doubt, you know, from a spectator point of view, there's value in that in terms of how the sport is run. But from a commercial point of view, what do you think is the key and the hook to get corporates and brands to see SA Hockey as a viable vehicle for a sponsorship, for example?
Yeah, I mean, it starts, Dylan, from my personal opinion, you know, it starts with a deeper bone. You know, if you take SA Hockey, there's only 3 permanent employees, you know, in the SA Hockey office. If you take England Hockey, they've got 75 employees, you know, so you only got so many, you know, dedicated human resources, day-to-day human resources. So we're going to look at that. And then of course, you know, the product itself, hockey, is great, but we need to create more products. We need to see it more on TV. We need to get our local leagues shown on TV. We need to build these kind of Euros. And like I say, I'm going to go back to school sport. It's amazing to see, you know, if there's 2 big schools playing each other, you know, there's bigger crowds at the first team school boys or school girls hockey game than at our national ladies or national men's game. And it all comes down to communication, it all comes down to the product. And I think that's where it has to start. So, I mean, we know for sponsors, you know, we have to give them their ROIs that they want and their visibility. And, you know, if we can get that kind of investment right for the sponsors, the commercials, I'm sure hockey will just go to the next level. And I'm sure it will be in a short while where you see a lot of gold medals coming back to South Africa for hockey.
You talked about hockey being a lifestyle and not necessarily a career. How exactly, at the age of 37, are you still playing hockey then, if that's the case?
Yeah, that's a good question, eh? but No, I've been very, very fortunate. You know, in my hockey career, my first sponsor was built today, is Chico Hockey, and then I started working for them as a youngster, and then eventually, you know, took over distribution rights in South Africa. So I've just been actually working on my passion. So I've been very, very fortunate. I didn't go into corporate where I've only got 15 leave days a year. So I've been trying to balance life, trying to balance business and also hockey. So business is my passion. Hockey is also my passion. So you take the cell phone with and you take the laptop with, and while the other eggs are sleeping, you know, you're doing a bit of craft. That's how it's been going. So I've been very, very fortunate. I know a couple of guys here, you know, they need to beg their bosses for a bit of leave, and you know, some of the eggs will take unpaid leave, so it's not that easy always. Yeah, but I've just been very, very lucky. Obviously in my career.
Let's talk through TK Sports. I mean, you're the MD there here in South Africa. Give us a sense of who TK Sports is. Is it a purely hockey sportswear brand, or is it involved in other sports?
Yeah, Dylan, originally, the brand started in 1985. It's a German brand. Head office is in Mannheim, just below Frankfurt. So, you know, TK, everybody will know TK as, you know, one of the biggest hockey brands in the world. TK is in 58 different countries. And in 2010, you know, our clothing department was also very, very strong. And in 2010, by luck, we kitted out one of the IPL teams, the Kings 11 Punjab, and then all of a sudden we started going to other sporting codes. Domestically in 2013, we started kitting out the Dolphins cricket team. They're still with us today. And then we started going to other, you know, rugby teams and university teams. So the clothing side just like built out. For me, again, I'm quite proud personally, you know, we've just taken over the SA hockey sponsorship. And a lot of people has also asked the same thing. It's like, are you putting money in there? But I could definitely see the value, and we've already got our return on value on that. So, you know, just to see, just putting merchandise programs in place, putting replica programs in place, and then you actually realize how big the hockey community is. So, yes, yeah. So that's my baby, TK, German brand. Had it since 2009 in South Africa on our own tables, and just been building out from there. We're also quite proud to see this weekend Griquas Rugby is jogging out in the Curry Cup for the first time with one of our TK products. So long may it last.
And is your involvement with TK Sports as MD here in South Africa, is that your full-time business interest? Do you have any other interests aside from that and obviously your hockey career?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a bit of an entrepreneur as well. I would say TK is my baby. That's my full-time. But, you know, I've dipped into a few other things. You know, we also got the Tray Cricket Helmet brand, you know, and some other things on the sideline. And then for my sins, I also dipped a bit into the restaurant industry a couple of years ago with the brand called 86 Public in Johannesburg with a couple of mates that's running a few restaurants for us. Yeah, but like I say, the sport industry, that is something that I know is absolutely my passion. I think that's where I'll probably stay for the rest of my life, to be honest.
What about your involvement in the South African music scene, Rassie? My sources tell me that you've dipped your toe into that as well.
Well, I wonder who those sources are. I've got a lot of mates in the music industry. I'm not the best singer. I can't play a music instrument, but I'm sure after 27 brandies, I've become a good dancer. So.
isn't anyone a good dancer after 27 brandies?
Absolutely.
You built any relationships with any musicians in South Africa, and what do your musical tastes look like?
Yeah, I'm quite diverse when it comes to music. So I've got a couple of mates in the music industry. One of my big friends is Hiram Koopman. He's one of the top saxophone players in South Africa. He plays for a couple of groups like Yevels Fantasties and Jeremy Loops and Spoegwolf. That's the latest hot, I think, Afrikaans band at the moment in South Africa. So yeah, he always invites me to one or two festivals. You become friends with the guys. Yeah, I absolutely enjoy it. I like a jaw of eggs, and I enjoy music, so I would say my music genre at home is quite diverse, to be honest.
Well, I would imagine it probably has to be. If you're in a national hockey squad at the age of 37 and you're spending time with guys in their early and mid-20s, is it fair to say that musical taste is pretty different?
Well, it's quite interesting. The other day we had to go for a medical, Dylan, and our doctor, Gavin Chang, he had to send my results back to the lab, and I had to do my test again because they said they found out I'm a 37-year-old trapped in a 23-year-old body, so, you know, maybe
it must be a hell of a thing for you as obviously one of the goalkeepers in the squad, and if I look at some of the other, you know, the other keepers in the squad, Sia Nolochungu, for example, who's in his mid-20s, I mean, it's massive age gap. I mean, it's obviously unusual for a national squad to be having a 37-year-old goalkeeper still around and still holding his own.
Yeah, I think, you know, as goalkeepers, we don't move too much. You know, we got some special movements, but yeah, over the years, I mean, I've just been, in a way, looked after my body. Like I said, I play in a lot of passion. I mean, these youngsters are pushing the hell of me. I wouldn't tell them that, but, you know, so they are keeping me on my toes. But yeah, I think the main thing is just to look after your body. I think very, very fortunate as a goalkeeper. You know, I think the older you get, the more experience you obviously get, your decision-making becomes better. So I think that's been on the one side of me. I am quite happy to say at the Olympics, I won't be the oldest goalkeeper, oldest player there. We got Vivaldi, the Argentinian goalkeeper, is 41. And then I think the Spanish goalkeeper, Kiko Cortez, is also 39. So I'm not going in there as the opa.
My sources also tell me that for some time you were the fastest in the national squad over 5 meters, but that's no longer the case.
No. That is. The one mistake they made, I did lose the record. I took the record in 2007 over 5 meters. and in those days, I was beating the top folks like Lloyd Norris Jones, all these sprinters. And then in 2011, we had another goalkeeper coming in, Jacques Leroux. So Jacques Leroux was probably a head taller than me. And so basically five meters is basically one step for him. So he took the record away from me for 6 months. Until I had to go back home, I had to go work hard, and I worked out my tactics, and I took it back. So the record is still on my name since 2011. So, yeah, wherever going that source, that's one mistake.
Let's go back to the beginning, Rusty, as we jump around a bit, yeah. And I believe you had quite an interesting introduction to hockey. That you were a rugby player, and then you, at the age of 18, only really started in hockey. But quite an interesting start. Talk us through how you came to play your first hockey game, how it all came about, and where you developed from there.
Yeah, it's actually been a crazy ride. I mean, my dad, you know, I grew up in Rustenburg. I was born in the Free State. My dad played provincial rugby for the Free State and Northern Free State back in the day. So I grew up next to the rugby field. And then we moved to Rustenburg at the age of 4. So there wasn't a lot of boys hockey going on. I mean, and as a youngster, like I think any South African youngster, the dream was to be able to become a Springbok one day or play for the Proteas cricket. So yeah, so rugby was my number one thing. So primary school, played Craven Week, and then you base your high school, what is the best rugby school, not the best academical school. So went to high school, and then played a lot of rugby, played a lot of cricket, but I also enjoyed some other sports as well. Never touched a hockey stick. And then in grade 9, I started picking up injuries. In a tackle, I broke my elbow, my cheekbone, my jaw, so I was out for half the season. And then in matric, you know, that's your big year that you want to make grade week team. And then I think it was the second trial game that I broke my ankle. I had to play to 6 screws of my ankle. So basically my last 2 years of school rugby, I didn't play. And then after that, I had a couple of my mates, they were some hockey players, and they said, well, listen, you're a cricket wicketkeeper. You know, we need a goalkeeper, at varsity. My first year of varsity in Pretoria. So I said, well, perfect place to meet chicks is obviously at the hockey club. So it was a no-brainer. So I put on the pads. And I was just lucky. I think, I don't know even what team I was playing. It was probably the 16, wherever there was a couple of beers going around. And then at the time, John Wright was there, the director of hockey. You know, obviously, our South African famous hockey umpire. And there was also a Belgian coach at the time at the club. He walked down the stairs and he pulled me off the field. He said, what the hell are you doing? And I said, well, you know, I'm just training. I know, is there anything, fees that I need to pay? I'm not sure what's going on. He said, no, you should not be training here. On Thursday night, this is 6 o'clock. That is when you need to come and train and you meet me at the field. So I rocked in there at 6 o'clock and I was training with the first team, varsity team at that stage. And I was like, well, to be honest, I don't even know the rules yet. So I was making like basic mistakes. So he taught me all the rules. We just started training in the mornings, and he just took me through my paces. And then, you know, I was just fortunate a couple of years later, I obviously just made a couple of saves and got into the SA University team. Paul Revington was then the SA coach at that stage, and he pulled me into my first training camp in 2005, and I'll never forget. He told me, he's like, listen, you're coming to training camp, but we're basically going to use you just as a dartboard for the next 2 years. So you need to make a decision. So you're probably out of the bush. you got something, but are you okay to train for 2 years with the national team when you're not going to play a test match? And that was cool for me. I mean, I've missed so much class and I had a good excuse to miss class. And I just travelled the SA team. And then 2007, when Clark took over, then I played my first game for South Africa. So that was the story in short.
It's a hell of a story. I mean, is there any truth in the suggestion that you have to be a little bit or quite a bit moggy and mad in the head to be a goalkeeper in hockey?
Absolutely. I think I'm quite normal, but according to my mates now, obviously there's one or two screws loose. But yeah, I mean, I just think to myself, I mean, my daughter, oldest daughter's now 11 years old, and she started to play hockey, and I was just thinking about it, you know, if she had to put on the pads, I mean, I will be an absolute wreck, because I think it is actually crazy what we are doing. But yeah, unfortunately, I'm still going. I've got a couple of skewed toes and a couple of skewed fingers, but it's all okay. So unfortunately, the role I picked, but I'm enjoying it.
I'd imagine if you're throwing yourself at short corners and penalty flicks and all sorts of things, that little hard ball coming at you, you've got to be a bit moggy.
Listen, I mean, like I said, this is the one reason I went to TK. Your equipment needs to be spot on. So I try to pad. I mean, as a youngster, you're a bit of a cowboy, you know, where your elbow guards, and I see your CRs also not training, and you got to go through that phase until you realize this, and the padding starts becoming important. So, but there's always a little gap that it catches. But yeah, I think it's just part of the game. So cataflams and a lot of ice bags, that is part of the game.
Now, Rusty, what about some of your interests away from the hockey field or the AstroTurf? You obviously have your business, you have TK Sports, you have your hockey career. I know you're a father twice over. Is there any time to get up to anything away from all of that? And what are some of your personal interests or hobbies?
Yeah, I mean, I must be honest, COVID forced me to play a bit of golf. And I started, you know, like really falling in love with the game. So I've been playing a lot of golf these days. I'm terrible though. But yeah, so definitely I would say, you know, if there's an open Sunday or open Saturday, I'd definitely love to play a round of golf. I quite love socializing. Like, you know, family time for me, I like entertaining at home and, you know, invite some mates over and try to watch a bit of rugby at home. But I must be honest, I think, I was just thinking now, you know, I'm retiring now in Tokyo. It'll be my last international hockey game. And they actually just asked me, it's like, you know, do you feel you can still play? And I said, yeah, physically I feel still okay. But, you know, I see now my daughters, they're growing up and they're starting to play a lot of sport. And I would like to spend a bit more time on the weekends, you know, dipping into their sport and their enjoyment. So I absolutely love family time. Like I said, I'm terrible in golf, but I enjoy it. Yeah, I know those are the weekends these days.
You mentioned your musical tastes quite diverse. What about TV or video? Do you come across a piece of video content or sports content during lockdown that perhaps caught your eye that was pretty memorable?
Yeah, you know what? I don't really watch a lot of TV. I mean, I can't wait until Thursdays these days, until the PGA starts Thursday nights, and try to fall asleep in front of the TV, watching a bit of that. But yeah, I mean, obviously the classic was that crazy Tiger guy over Netflix. I mean,
Tiger King, yeah. Joe the Tiger King.
I quite enjoyed that because I thought, you know, goalkeepers are crazy, but there are crazier people than us out there. I think it was amazing to watch just, you know, that whole program with the Springboks, with Rusty Erasmus and them, you know, how they put everything together. And it was just amazing to see because obviously it hit home because obviously this is exactly what we're busy with. And it's always been interesting for me as well. Out of that story, I actually realized, you know, how diverse our country is and how many superpowers every culture has got in one nation. And I remember, you know, everybody was asking me a couple of years ago, we had Mark Hopkins as our national coach, and he was from England. And I mean, Hopper obviously knew the game very, very well. But I think the one thing that he did battle with was it's like you have to be slightly different to other people and understand the deeper things of people to get the best out of them. And I think that was definitely a life lesson and something I really enjoyed over lockdown watching that.
Now, Rossi, lastly, there's no doubt that you guys go to the Olympics as massive underdogs. But what would represent a good or great result going to Tokyo for the national men's hockey team?
Yeah, I mean, we're obviously going there as a lowest ranked team. We know that. we're going there as a very hungry team. We want to go prove something, especially for myself. You know, I've still got some, feel like I've got some unfinished business from previous Olympics. That's why I'm carrying on. We're in a tough pool. Everybody knows we're in the pool of death. You know, we got Belgium, we got Holland, we got Germany, we got Great Britain, and then we got Canada. I mean, we just want to make sure that, you know, we need two good results to get ourselves into the quarterfinals. So our only focus is now to make sure we get out of the pool stages and get, you know, there's one or two teams that we are targeting. Get through the pool stages and we get into the quarterfinals. You know, international sport at that level is funny. Anything can happen on the day. It doesn't matter who you're playing. So, yeah, like I say, we're just preparing as well as we can at the moment. We're going there with a very good plan. Get through the pool stages and hopefully in the quarterfinals we can upset one or two teams and, you know, and hopefully we see ourselves in the medals. That would be the dream.
So he fancies a bit of Tiger King, but he's not much of a golfer and he needs 27 brandies to hit the dance floor. At least he admits he's got a loose screw or two. No surprise there. I guess you have to as a top-level goalkeeper.